Good morning. All right, so we're in our family series, and hopefully you've been noticing that we've been trying to bring up topics that apply to everyone and the family. This topic is really about conflict and resolving conflict. And so one of the first things in family to resolve conflict is to stop and listen. Listening in the family is very important to know what's going on in our family. Otherwise, we're just seeking our own if we're not listening to the others. And notice how God deals with conflict. He says, go to that person in private first. Go to the person in private and resolve the conflict. So there's two things in that verse that was read that, one, we need to get to the truth. All right, what's the right thing to do? This is a conflict, it's a problem. What's the right thing to do? And secondly, let's get to a resolution that agrees with God. All right, not just what agrees for ourselves. And so the biblical resolution of conflict is what agrees with God, the other person, and yourself. And so yourself is really last. It doesn't mean you don't get something, some motivation to resolve the conflict. It doesn't mean that you have to give in all the time. Doesn't mean that you have to be walked all over. There is a proper way of resolving conflict. So this morning, even though I've labeled this listening in the family, we're going to be dealing with conflict, and it has a lot to do with you. You're the one who needs to resolve conflict. It starts with you. You're the one that you're in control of. You're the one that needs to be thinking about how you are going to change to help the situation. So we ask the question, who's listening? Well, you know, maybe you don't have your own family. Maybe you're a single person, but who's listening to your conversations? There are people around you. In the home, it's very traumatic for the child to hear the parents arguing. The child doesn't want to take sides. The child loves both parents. All right? And it takes a lot of learning to learn how not to argue in front of children. Or, in other words, it takes a lot of learning to learn how to help teach your children how to deal with conflict, because that's really what we're doing here. If we're screaming in front of the children, we're teaching the children to scream, and that's how you resolve conflict. But if we're trying to deal with conflict in a good way, in a biblical way, we'll give the child tools to be able to deal with the conflict, and we'll give them a safer environment. And so listening in the home is very important, especially if we realize that listening in the home means God is also listening. So whether you're in your home or at work or wherever you are, if you're having a conflict, God is there. So there's actually three people involved. The two persons going back and forth and God. And so maybe you wouldn't swear around the child. Would you swear in front of God? God is always there. God is always there. If there's conflict, God is always there. And conflict is something that has a lot of bad things happening if we don't resolve it. Right? There's a lot of bad outcome with conflict. So if we don't resolve it, look at this, unhappiness, fear, poor self-esteem, negative thoughts, confusion, anger, just goes on and on and on. If you don't deal with conflict, it gets worse. It's just like sin. You don't deal with sin because that causes conflict. You have to approach it. You have to do this work, and you're afraid of dealing with it, but that sin will get worse. It will get out of control. If you put conflict aside and never think about it, never plan for it, then you will fall into the pit. You will fall into a snare. You will be falling into a trap, and it will make your life worse. And so your life will not be in harmony. And we live in a world that God acknowledges has physical war and spiritual war. So there is conflict in this world until we leave it, until heaven. All right? So when we're in heaven, there's no more tears. But here, we are being taught to deal with conflict. And so conflict must have something positive to result from it. Conflict helps us to identify problems. Okay? So look in the Garden of Eden. Conflict started right away in the world, in the Garden of Eden with Adam and Eve. All right? Should we eat from the tree that's been forbidden from its fruit? There's a conflict right there. Instead of going to God and talking about it, all right, they said, God said, and they didn't talk to God. They just said, God said. And the woman goes and talks with the snake. Is that how we should deal with our problems? Find someone who kind of agrees with us or wants to go our way. The man gets together with his wife, and she says, I ate it, you can too. There's more conflict. They're in conflict with God, they're in conflict with each other, there's conflict happening in the first family. And that conflict spills over into Cain and Abel. Oh, you think you're better than I am, your worship was accepted. I'm going to do you in. What tool is that? What kind of conflict tool is that? How are we learning from that? Conflicts can make life more interesting. Well, that's certainly true. That's certainly true. Just add some fog on the highway. It makes life much more interesting. So here's conflict create new ideas, solutions. All right, it makes you think. All right, right away, if you're going to be a Christian, you're going to find out that being a Christian is not being lazy. All right, every time you go into the Bible, God's having you think, he's having you do work, he's saying, come reason with me. It takes an effort. That effort, people don't want to put in the time. They don't want to take the time, and that's why they scream, because screaming is easier. Okay? I was around my granddaughter this week, and the key phrase was, use your words. Why? Why is that the key phrase? Because when she has a difficulty, she's like, ah! And if you approach conflict like that your whole way, you're going to be an adult child. So it's teaching us something. All right? Next, you learn more about others because you're stopping to listen. You're going to stop and listen and pay attention to the other person if you're going to resolve a conflict with another person properly. It's not taking up a rock and beating them. You learn more about yourself because you stop and listen. And when you're honest with yourself, when you stop and listen, you learn, oh yeah, I'm being a big selfish baby. Sometimes that's the way it is. I'm being a big selfish baby. first thing to do always when there is a conflict is to pray. Even when there's not a conflict, the first thing to do is pray. The third person who's always in there, who is actually the first person, is God. God is always there. He always sees what's going on. He's seen the first conflict in the family in the beginning. He sees that there's going to be a war at the end. He sees the spiritual war going on. He knows more about war than you and I could even care about. He understands where we're at. He understands what we need and how to help us. Look at Jesus' example here in John 17, 1 through 3. After Jesus had said this, he looked up to heaven and said, "Father, the hour has come." Now, if you're familiar with Jesus' life, you know that all of his life, he was facing Satan. He was in a conflict. Not just the time he was 40 days fasting. And in that, he quoted the Bible, he quoted Scripture, he quoted the Word of God, he prayed with God. And so he's using God and the wisdom of God and God's solutions and his tools to resolve conflict. That is our example. Until the final hour, all the way to death, and he says, "This is what I'm here for. I'm here to do your will, Lord, Father. I'm here to do your will, Father. I'm here to glorify you. Please lift me up. Please lift me up that you may be lifted up. I'm going to allow myself to be put down, put to death, tortured and put to death, and my blood spilled, my life given to overcome sin, to free you and I. And by being resurrected, it was the work of God, not the work of men." So we have the tools, and we have Jesus praying about conflict that we haven't even experienced. We are not dead. We have not experienced conflict to death today. But we have this example in the Bible of human after human going through conflict, some of them speaking with God, praying with God, and getting results from God, getting guidance from God, getting hope from God, getting a resolution by using the tools that God has given. So it's important to always start with prayer. End with prayer. In the middle, pray. Now here's some interesting chart. I thought it was interesting. I'm a nerd. What can I say? I thought it was interesting. This is a Japanese conflict resolution chart. And it's based on harmony. Okay? And here we have a little line, which is a gauge of chance of incurring unwanted obligations. So over here, where there's no harmony, you have to take on a lot of obligations you don't want to take on. And over here, where there's harmony, it's a low amount of unwanted obligations. You know why? Because you've signed up for the obligation. You're in agreement. You're in harmony. That's what conflict resolution is about. So here we have no harmony. There's many differences. There's a low chance of you getting to your goal, all right? And there's visible conflict. Could be screaming. Okay? That's the bad part. That's where we start off when there's a big conflict going on. And now the action right here is this arrow. The action is, oh, I can hide the differences. Oh, I can just ignore it and just say, oh, there's no conflict and walk away. Well, you still have a low chance of getting to your goal. You avoided conflict. You avoid the work of working through the conflict. So you don't have all that work to do, but you have a high chance of still having obligations you don't want to sign up for. You see how that works? So if you walk away from it, the conflict is still there. It's just that you're letting someone else set your agenda. And so you're not really resolving your conflict. You're just pushing it forward. And so then you have apparent harmony because you've pushed it forward, but there's still many differences. There's still a low chance of getting to your goal. There's an invisible conflict. You know what happens to invisible conflict? It's like invisible sin. Just say invisible sin, and it just piles up. It's there. It's a burden, but you just haven't talked about it. Life is a dialogue. Even if you're living as a hermit, you're going to talk to yourself. Life is a dialogue. And so we got to get things out in the open if we really want to get rid of this invisible conflict. All right? So if we, the sooner we bring things out in the open to openly resolve conflict, we can build shared values. We can have harmony quicker. We can skip over. This is like the bridge in Candyland. You hit the bridge by disclosing the conflict, being open and honest and truthful, and laying it on the table. You can skip ahead and skip all kinds of other problems. But if you don't, and you say, I want to keep avoiding the conflict, I want to wait for differences to diminish over time. Some people do that. They say, oh, there's a conflict, time heals all wounds. So I'm just going to shove it under the rug and let it heal itself. That's not healing anything. That's still an invisible conflict. You haven't got harmony yet. Partial harmony. You have partial harmony, maybe. All right? There's a few differences. You still haven't made it to your goal, and there's a little bit less conflict because maybe people have forgotten or walked away from you. But the sin still lies at the door. See, it's not resolved. It's still there. There's still a problem. There's still a burden. You're not in harmony with the other person. Now you take an action. You create shared values. Before, when we had the conflict, I had my values and you had your values. And my values are most important to me, and your values are most important to you. Well, what if we actually got together to sing the song so that we were both singing the same notes? I'm not a great singer, but, you know, I could try. So I compromise. I try to sing the right notes. That's shared values. When you start to have shared values, also called compromising, you don't like that word. You know, like compromising, okay? We don't compromise with God, but we compromise, have shared values. Then we can have harmony. We minimize the differences. We have a high chance of reaching our goal, like staying married, and lower conflict, okay? Doesn't mean there's no conflict, because life has conflict. There are going to be other times when we disagree. So what we're trying to do here is build problem-solving skills, and we're trying to teach them to our children. So if you go to a church meeting, and I'm the person who's kind of guiding the meeting, if you will, all right? I'm not trying to take over the meeting, just guiding the meeting. I am following this template, which is a standard template for business problem-solving, all right? It's standard. It's everywhere. All right. This is not something that I just made up. And so we state the problem. We have ground rules. All right. Ground rules are things like, all right, when the other person's speaking, you don't speak. When they're presenting an idea, you don't try to analyze it right away. All right. So we have rules. We have being polite and everything like that. All right. No name calling. Okay. Brainstorm the solutions. All right, this is where we come to the table in a conflict. We have our solution. And it's clear to us that our solution is 100% winner. Is that always true? My solution is always the 100% winner solution. So you should just listen to my solution. That's the way we come into a conflict. That's what causes the screaming and yelling. All right? And so what we do in business is we say we brainstorm the solutions. We brainstorm the solutions. We come up with a lot of solutions without tearing them down or analyzing them at this stage. We just write them down. It's free form. Anyone can come up with solutions. So you're having a problem, even if you're at home, if you stop and listen and think and say, all right, let's write down the solutions. What's the real problem? Let's write down the solutions to the real problem. Sometimes what you're screaming about is not the real problem at all. Have you ever had that happen? Your socks are on the floor, but what the real problem is that I feel like a slave. Okay? So, you got to get to the real problem. And when you're working through and brainstorming solutions, sometimes the real problem will bubble up. And if you're paying attention, you can say, oh, the real problem is this, and you fix the statement of the problem. Okay, see how that works? So if you're at a meeting, this is what I'm going through. I'm going through these words. Evaluate, now you come to the evaluate the solutions. What's the best solution? This sounds all boring. It's all very mechanical, right? Reach solution with God as a team. Include God in the solution. All right, that's where a lot of family solutions fail. We don't include God in the solution, and God gets left out, and our solution fails, and it fails hard. And that can cause a lot of problems with money problems. Identify action items. So if you're in the meeting with me, before I leave the meeting, I want to know, what are we going to do to fix the problem? What are the actions we have to take? Identify the owners of the action items. I need someone to sign up to help fix the problem. Are you signing up right here and right now? I want to know, can I depend on you? Set a time to review the progress. So we've also been taking notes at the meeting so that we can set a time and review the progress from the notes. I didn't write that down here, but we always have a note taker. And then make adjustments at the review. Now, all right, so this is all mechanical. This is something that my parents never sat down and went through this list with me. Okay? So believe me, when I got into the world, I was a problem. Okay? But here's a typical kid's chart over here. It says resolve down this side. And it says reach out. So come together with a person you're having a conflict with. Remember, that's what God said. Go to your brother. Number one thing, reach out. Engage in conversation. You have to talk. Don't ignore the conflict. You have to talk through the conflict. Seek to solve the problem. Agree to come up with a sensible solution. Open up. All right. Calmly communicate your side of the story to explain how you feel. That's the rules. Calmly communicate. That's part of the rules over here. Listen intently. Listen to the other person so that you can understand their point of view. Oh, their point of view? What about my point of view? My point of view is important. That's where the conflict is, isn't it? Voice solutions. Brainstorm solutions to resolve your conflict together. End on a good note. Don't let the sun go down on your wrath. Okay? That's what God says. All right, end on a good note. Even if you didn't agree completely, if you've reached some type of harmony, then you have to be in harmony. You can't be just giving lip service. Do you know what I'm talking about there? Lip service? Like, yeah, okay, go ahead, do it. That's lip service. But I'm talking about really signing up and saying, thank you for working with me on this. I'm going to try hard. I'm going to really work in this solution. You're going to be part of the solution, not part of the problem. That's what this means, end on a good note. This is a chart for maybe 10-year-olds. Okay, this is the adult list over here. This is the chart for 10-year-olds. They have one with four items for younger than 10. All right? The good thing about this is that because it's a standard procedure, we can find children's charts and tape them on the wall of the house and walk through the same procedure every time so that as the child grows, they learn to resolve conflict instead of run from it, instead of hiding from it, instead of throwing gas on it. That's what we're trying to do. We're trying to give our kids tools. Give our children tools that they can use as adults so that when we say you're an adult, we mean it. They can go out in society and not be a problem. You can go out in society and not be a problem because when we're coming to God, He is changing us. Look what it says here in Ephesians chapter 4, starting in verse 17. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 17, talking about the new man. This I say, therefore, and testify in the Lord, that you should no longer walk as the rest of the Gentiles walk in the futility of their mind, having their understanding darkened, being alienated from the life of God, because of the ignorance that is in them, because of the blindness of their heart, who being past feeling, hear have given themselves over to lewdness to work all uncleanliness with greediness. But you have not so learned Christ, if indeed you have heard him and have been taught by him, as the truth is in Jesus, that you put off concerning your former conduct the old man which grows corrupt according to the deceitful lusts, and be renewed in the spirit of your mind, that you put on the new man, which was created according to God in true righteousness and holiness. Put off. You see that? Put off concerning your former conduct. We're all challenged to do that. And so we're trying to give each other tools. And part of these tools is how to work together as a family. This entire congregation is in the family of God. And we need to work through problems. This is a template. So that's all good and fine. But what about when emotion's involved? Then the template blows up somehow. Somehow the template's not working. All right? And over here we have behaviors that are focused on others. We have uncooperative, unreasonable, cooperative, and reasonable. And over here we have behaviors that are focused on self, assertive, confrontive, unassertive, avoidant, avoidant. How many times have we used this blocks? All right. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to get into this square here, all right, using this middle here. So no matter what square you're in, we negotiate, we talk through the problem. We're talking through the problem. Because we know that right now, I'm having a selfish kind of moment, and I'm feeling uncooperative, and I'm feeling, you know, like I want to just run away and hide. Well, I still need to talk and negotiate to get to this, where we have mutual problem solving. That's what this chart is trying to say. That you're going to start off in a block that you don't want to be, and you need to get to here. And so it's just a short form of the rules we went through. But what it's going to take is the three perspectives. Okay? The first perspective is your own. What's really bothering you? Do you ever hear someone say that? You just hear this person walking around the house, grumbling. What's your problem? Okay, you have to know what your problem is too. If you see yourself walking around the house kind of talking like that, you have to say, what is my problem? So first is introspective. What's really bothering me? Am I sick? Am I tired? You know, I'm not kind of thinking right. Am I feeling selfish? You know, there's a lot of things that could be bothering me. It could be sin. I'm not getting my sin. Whatever that sin, you put your sin there. You have to be introspective. You have to be honest with yourself. And once you're honest with yourself, then you can assess whether your position is a position that's going to be a problem solver or a problem maker. And so first you assess your position. Then you're in this conflict, and this is the hard part, because when you're in a conflict and you haven't counted to 10 yet, you're probably not thinking, and you're only 100% convinced about your side, your opinion, your idea. We have to have empathy for the other person. So I'm in this negotiation, and I have to ask myself, what do they really want? They're walking around, and they're like, well, what do they really want? What's really bothering them? Is it the fact that my smelly socks are in the floor, or is it something else? It could be the socks. I'm not a mind reader, and I'm trying to figure this out. All right? How are they interpreting what I'm saying and doing? And so here's the part that I always forget. I'm totally bad at politics. I'm totally bad at this stuff. It's 10% of what you're doing, or what 10% of what the idea is, but 90% of what you're saying and doing affects the negotiation. And so if you come into the negotiation and you have a good idea, but you present it as a grouch or authoritatively or some other way, that your presentation loses the battle for you. And so 90% is presentation at that point in the negotiation. You're having an argument. You're going back and forth. You have this conflict going on. And if you're acting like, the other person has already run away from you. It doesn't matter what you're saying. You could be 100% right. It doesn't matter. The person's like, that person's crazy. I'm out of here. Okay? So you calm down. We count to 10. We think through what we're doing, and we start to think, what does that other person see? Are they seeing this crazy person, or are they seeing someone who wants to help them or work with them? That's the important part of this step number two. Not just realizing what the other person wants, but presenting it how they can take it in. Do you understand that point? It's a very important point. Third, and this is really the top thing, is that we don't negotiate with God. As Christians, we're not negotiating with God. If something's right, it's right. If something's wrong, it's wrong. But we need to have empathy on how does God feel about this. The only way we can have empathy about how God feels about something is if we read in God's word that he hates that or he likes that. All right? So if God says that's an abomination, we can kind of get a feeling for that. All right? If God says, you know, I love this person. This person has my heart in them because of what they did. All right, then we can get a feel for what God likes and dislikes. We can have empathy for how God's position is on this conflict. And many times, God is not happy that there's a conflict. Since God has asked us to be peacemakers, if we're throwing gasoline on the fire, he's probably not happy with our stance at that point. He's not happy that we're throwing gas on the fire. All right? So we have to take time when we think about what God really wants. He wants peace, but he wants it truth. Peace and truth, truth and peace. And so it's doing the right thing, not for ourselves or the other person, but the way God says to do it. That God is the third person in the equation. This third person in the equation, this deity, this, you know, our all-loving and powerful and caring God is left out by the world. And so if you go to a worldly negotiating class, if you will, they're not going to have this person here. They're not going to care about that position there. As a Christian who is living your life dedicated to Jesus Christ, to God, the true God in heaven, the one that you have changed your life to be like, you care about this third position. This third position influences all your negotiation. Because if you think the will of God is to fall on your sword, you should do it. That's what Jesus said. The hour has come. Now, God doesn't put us in that position all the time. We don't have to fall on our sword just to make harmony. There's more work. It's better if we work through all three perspectives so that you're in harmony. You get to know the other person gets to know you, you get to know yourself, you get to know the will of God. That's all a building up, learning, positive experience for you. Okay? And so to just fall on your sword is not really getting to this square over here. It's just giving someone their own way. Okay? So we're not teaching our children a tool at that point. All right? If we just give in to our children without working through the proper steps, then we're not teaching them anything. We're teaching them to be selfish. We're being lazy. And here we are. We have the fruit of the Spirit. Now, we can read through the fruit of the Spirit. It doesn't hurt us. All right, Galatians, the 5th chapter, 22. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against there is no law. And those who are Christ have crucified the flesh with its passions and desires. If we live in the Spirit, let us also walk in the Spirit. Let us not become conceited, provoking one another, envying one another. There's do's and don'ts. Walking in the Spirit. So over here, I have some tips. The first one is, be hard on the problem, not the people. Be hard on the problem, not the people. This is an interesting tip because it goes along with number two, stop throwing stones. No blaming, no shame, no guilt to get our own way. So if we go into the problem to get our own way, we're not going to care about people. People are things at that point. You want to see someone plan a physical war? The people are collateral damage. It's not their goal to save the people. All right? Christians are there to be peacemakers to save the people. We're peacemakers in the home to save our family. And so we care about the people that we're in conflict with. And so there's no room for blaming, shaming, or guilting. That doesn't solve the problem. That's one of the time wasters. So if you're going to come up to me and tell me how bad I am and keep going on and not present a solution, I'm going to tell you that you're wasting your time with me. I already know I'm bad. All right? You already got that point across. Okay, what's the solution? What do you want? That's where I'm at. You come to me, that's where I'm at. I want a solution. I'm a guy. All right? If you just want to crab at me, I'm going to say, all right, I gave you a minute. But I have to have more patience, I admit. But my frame of mind, my mind is off in another place. It's saying, hey, I want to hear a solution. I want to know what you want. If you want me to change, you have to tell me what I have to do to change. That's where I'm at. Number three, drama has nothing to do with the problem. Now, I'm going to tell you that many of the times, you are going to be part of the drama. As soon as you get to that point where you feel that you're morally right, that you're so correct, that you have an interest in this and that it's, you know, it's really mine or the highway, then drama happens. And that's from the first, this is where the screaming, the volume starts to go up. All right? The silliness starts to happen. All right? But drama is another time waster. If you can calm down and listen to the way you're acting, the way you're speaking, and step back and be a third person and say, wow, I'm being the drama queen. I don't care whether you're a guy or a woman. You're being the drama queen. All right? And say, all right, let me back up for a moment. Let me approach this differently. Let me not scare you off with the way I'm carrying on. If you can do that in an argument, the argument's closer to being resolved. Okay? If we can remove that drama component. Restate the problem as a mutual problem. So when you're working with someone on negotiation, if you're working with someone even at a hostage crisis, all right, they restate the problem to say, how do we resolve this, you know, for the both of us? How are we solving the problem? It's not just my problem. It's not just your problem. How are we working together to solve that problem? You restate the problem to say we. Some rules. Here's the hard part. These are the hard rules. Let the other person blow off the steam. Okay? Just let them blow it off. I don't care, you know, don't let them hit you, all right? Don't let them be, you know, abuse you physically or anything, but let them rant for a while and try to be calm. Don't take it personal. Don't get fooled into going to the fight. Do you know what that means, going to the fight? It takes two to argue, and they're trying to bring you into the fight. And it's easy to get fooled into the fight when you're not thinking clear. When I'm tired, I'm not thinking clear. It's easy for me to get worked up. Don't get fooled into going to the fight while they're blowing off their steam. You remain calm. It doesn't mean that you've left the negotiation. It doesn't mean that you've stopped being the peacemaker. It means that you're giving that steam time to blow off, just like Old Faithful. Let it blow out. All the water's gone. Now you can walk up and look right down the hole there. And look up. Hey, yeah, there's water comes out of there. Maybe it won't happen right away. But you're waiting for a safe time to approach this geyser. All right? So you let it blow off. You come back to the negotiating table. Acknowledge the other person's perspective, but don't be patronizing. If they think you're fake, they're going to sense it and say, you're just patronizing me. You're just saying that. Just give me lip service. You have to come really trying to understand their position. Be patient. Always one I'm working on. Think before you speak. Always one I'm trying to work on. Give the benefit of the doubt. Always one we're trying to work on. What if you're having a meeting and the other person is late? All right? This is where Josh was saying he's optimist. His chocolate hot chocolate with cream on it, right? If you're the optimist, then the other person had some really good reason for being late. If you're worked up and you're taking a defensive side of this negotiation, they're doing it on purpose. They're always late. They're trying to abuse me. Blah, 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 blah. Okay? Obviously, that's throwing gas on the fire, as far as you are concerned, whether you express it to the other person or not. They hate me. They don't like me. Blah, blah, blah. It's going to hinder your negotiating skills. You're not going to be able to be a peacemaker. Practice seeing the best in the other person. That's what all these things do, all right? If you practice all these things, you practice this fruit of the Spirit, it's really that you're going to be practicing seeing the best in the other person, all right? You're not going to be labeling the other person as Satan. Do you understand what I'm saying there? You're not going to be hating them. Because Jesus said in Matthew chapter 5, if you hate someone, you're a sinner. You killed your brother. Okay? Jesus died for you, so pay it forward. All right? Christians can afford to negotiate because they have nothing to lose, really. Jesus already negotiated for me. He's already given his body and his blood that I can turn my life around. That other person can turn their life around if you give them benefit of the doubt. If you pay it forward. If you say, I'm willing to listen to you because Jesus listened for me. And that's where listening as a family comes in. If you don't, then there's Ephesians, the fourth chapter, the rest of it. Starting in verse 25 of Ephesians chapter 4, therefore, putting away lying, let each one of you speak truth with his neighbor. Speak truth. That's what we're trying to do in negotiation. Speak the truth and resolve the conflict. For we are members of one another. We are members of one another. We're in the same family. And so if you're not willing to take the time to learn how to negotiate, then maybe you're just a fire starter. Maybe you're not interested in being a peacemaker. Maybe you're just disrupting people. You see, disrupting is the choice where I'd rather be right than be happy. So you can be right, or you can be happy, or the third choice is you can be happy by being right with God. That's the third choice for the Christian. Be angry and do not sin. Do not let the sun go down in your wrath, nor give place to the devil. Let him who stole steal no longer, but rather let him labor, working with his hands what is good, that he may have something to give him who has need. Let no corrupt word proceed out of your mouth, but what is good for a necessary edification, that it may impart grace to the hearers. And do not grieve the Holy Spirit of God, by whom you are sealed for the day of redemption. Let all bitterness, wrath, anger, clamor, and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice, and be tender, and be kind to one another, tender-hearted, forgiving one another, even as God in Christ forgave you. That's what we're saying. That there is a place in learning how to negotiate. In learning how to negotiate is part of the Bible because Jesus says, be a peacemaker. Being a peacemaker is learning how to negotiate, is giving the truth with love. Are we just going to step right into it? No. I've got years of bad sin, bad habits that I have to practice the fruits of the Spirit. But if I don't plan, I plan to fail. And so that's what this is about. Taking steps to negotiate with the other person. So you might not want to do it. You may think, hey, that's still too much work for me. But if you were taught how to do this from a child, you'd be better off today. So teach your children. Teach yourself. Don't learn the hard way like I have to.